Ever wondered why we know what we should do but fail to follow through? The answer lies in understanding behavior change as a science rather than an art. Instead of starting with solutions, we need to begin with the end in mind, the specific behavior we want to create, and work backward. This approach flips traditional product development upside down by examining actual human behavior before crafting solutions. When Microsoft's Bing team wanted to increase student searches, they discovered teachers' concerns about inappropriate content were the primary barrier, not student motivation. By addressing these specific concerns through a specialized version with locked safe search and no ads, school-based searches increased by 40%. When population, wants to, motivation, and they, limitations, they will, behavior, as measured by, data. This simple formula creates accountability by forcing clarity about who we're targeting, why they would act, what conditions must exist, what action we want, and how we'll measure success. Consider Microsoft's revolutionary vision, a computer on every desk running Microsoft software. While groundbreaking, it focused on ownership rather than meaningful usage, leading Microsoft to prioritize sales over user experience. When Google Docs emerged with a usage-focused approach, Microsoft had to pivot dramatically to Office 365. Effective behavioral statements should be bold rather than timid. Uber didn't aim for people to sometimes use their service, but to make it the default choice for all point-to-point travel. Behavior change isn't about directly controlling what people do. It's about understanding the pressures that influence choices. The model is simple. Promoting pressures make behaviors more likely, while inhibiting pressures make them less likely. Our behavior results from the balance between these competing forces. Consider M&Ms. Taste is the obvious promoting pressure, but physical availability is a powerful inhibiting pressure. We eat significantly more candy when it's within reach versus across the room. Google reduced employee candy consumption by 3.1 million calories over 7 weeks simply by using opaque containers instead of clear ones. When mapping pressures, we show predictable biases. Focusing almost exclusively on promoting pressures when trying to increase behaviors and inhibiting pressures when trying to decrease them. Uber succeeded by recognizing that the desire to travel was already strong. They just needed to remove barriers like cost, wait time, and payment friction. The most overlooked opportunity in behavior change is addressing inhibiting pressures, the barriers preventing motivated people from acting. These pressures have unique advantages. They're homogeneous, applying universally, have longevity, remaining relevant longer than promoting pressures, and benefit from prospect theory. Losses hurt worse than equivalent gains feel good. The penny gap demonstrates this. People who wouldn't pay even 1 cent for a t-shirt will happily take it for free, showing how eliminating and inhibiting pressure can trigger behavior change. The transition from identifying pressures to designing interventions is where many organizations falter, rushing toward solutions that sound good but don't address underlying issues. Research shows breakthrough solutions typically emerge after generating 30-40 initial concepts, not in the first few ideas. When Meetup added a pledge to create real face-to-face community checkbox to their group creation process, it increased successful Meetup creation by 16% while reducing spam by strengthening users' authentic motivation. A hospital increased hand hygiene compliance by 45% not through additional training, but by placing sanitizer stations directly in caregivers' natural path. In the Good Samaritan study, seminary students' likelihood of helping someone in distress wasn't determined by religious beliefs, but primarily by time pressure. GetRaise.com addressed women's pay inequality by removing barriers to asking for raises, generating an average increase of $7,000 for 80% of users. The most effective interventions often seem obvious in retrospect because they directly address validated pressures rather than implementing flashy solutions that miss the mark. Behavior change requires evidence, not intuition. Progress from pilot to test to scale represents increasing certainty about effectiveness. Pilots should be small-scale and operationally dirty, designed for minimal organizational impact and quick implementation, ideally within 2 weeks. This approach allows rapid hypothesis testing without complexity. A simple pilot might involve sending 100 people a letter, treatment group, while doing nothing for another 100, control group. While academia demands P is less than 0.05, even P equals 0.2 can be acceptable at the pilot stage if risks are minimal. After validation, create a juice squeeze statement. We are confidence that intervention will direction behavior. Scaling requires effort and will result in change. Document all results, successful, marginal, or failed, to avoid the file drawer problem where negative results are hidden. Even successful interventions eventually stop working, requiring continuous monitoring. Meaningful behavior change doesn't require massive resources, just focus on the right pressures. By systematically addressing the forces shaping human behavior, we can create interventions that work, designing a future worth choosing, one behavior at a time. Why does behavior change carry a stigma despite being central to respected roles like teachers and parents? We attribute our good actions to character, but blame bad behaviors on environment, while reversing this logic for others. In reality, behavior change itself is morally neutral. The ethics lie in what behaviors we change and how. The ethical rule is straightforward. If your outcome behavior doesn't honor the population's motivations, it's unethical. A workplace wellness program is ethical when aligned with employees' health desires, but unethical if it solely reduces insurance costs while ignoring worker preferences. Ethical interventions address gaps between intentions and actions, wanting to exercise but struggling to start, by helping bridge this divide rather than forcing unwanted behavior. They also tackle intention-goal gaps, wanting to save money but resisting budgeting, by finding alternative pathways aligned with individual values. Facebook's emotional contagion study, which manipulated users' news feeds without consent, demonstrates how ethical failures harm users and cost companies billions in trust and market value. Vague goals like make customers love our product fail because without clear, measurable metrics, you can't evaluate whether interventions work or compare their effectiveness. Our identities serve as powerful behavioral drivers that continuously adapt to circumstances. Rather than viewing identity through simplistic personas, understand it as hierarchical, with roles representing collections of values and behaviors. A parent identity encompasses values like nurturing and protection, manifesting in behaviors from preparing healthy meals to researching schools. Identity can be leveraged through three techniques: priming, activating existing identity behavior connections; moderation, strengthening or weakening these connections; and mediation, creating new connections through intermediate values. The hashtag Like a Girl campaign by Always demonstrates moderation by weakening the association between girl and terrible running. When hospitals created a new association between computing and care, the author's mother, a nurse who initially feared technology, embraced computers because they aligned with her caregiver identity. This was mediation, linking computing to care so her existing identity could incorporate the new behavior. Without clear behavioral statements, you can't evaluate interventions or compare effectiveness. What specific behavior are you trying to create, and which identity-based technique might help your behavior change efforts succeed?